Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Robert Campbell, publisher of the RealEstateTiming.com newsletter. He's speaking to us from beautiful San Diego. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Bob, I think the big question in your newsletter this week was, should you buy or should you rent?
I'm so glad that that's your first question, Jim, and we're focusing on that, because this is something that I've just learned recently, that most people think renting is like throwing money away. It's just a waste of money. And that's true some of the time, but certainly not all of the time. And if you look at long-term charts, the only time that owning a home is better than renting is when home prices are appreciating, and appreciating at a significant rate. Otherwise, during real estate corrections, which are part of the cycle, which is just like day and night, when real estate's going down, it's less expensive to rent by a wide margin. And today, here in the United States, for example, that to own a home, I don't have my newsletter in front of me, but I believe to pay all the costs of owning a home, you know, like mortgage payments, taxes, insurance, a little bit of maintenance and all that stuff, I believe the average price home in the United States, that payment would be $2,800 a month. And to rent that same home, it would be $1,800 a month. So there is $1,000 a month difference. But the key is, what direction are housing prices going to go? And the direction that housing prices are going to go is down. So right now, you know, put aside all your personal preferences about, you can't paint the house and you can be, you know, asked to leave and all those other things. From a purely financial standpoint, let's say that renting is a much better option financially now than owning. And so, and one way to get around the inconveniences of you might go out and get yourself a 2-year lease, or maybe even a 3-year lease. If you're a good tenant and you can pay the rent, you know, pay them an extra $100 a month and say, hey, I'll pay you an extra $100 a month. Instead of $1,800, I'll pay you $1,900, $1,950 on one condition. What's that, sir? That you give me a 3-year lease. And most likely you go, deal. Now you're in the house for 3 years. Now you got 3 years where the home price is going down, which is going to be significant, and you'll deal with the situation again when your lease is up. But it's really interesting. When I wrote my book, Timing the Real Estate Market, everybody, I was totally unaware of that. And when I write my second book, Timing the Real Estate Market, which is going to be, it's not going to replace my first, but be an addition to it, it's going to include things like that. So it's very, very key. But right now, with it, it's a much better choice financially to rent than buy.
Now, what about those who say a mortgage payment is really a forced savings account payment because of the equity you're building up in your house, and eventually it's paid off and you can use that equity for other things?
Well, that if you look at it over a 30-year period of time, yes. I mean, I guess that is a true statement. However, do most people live in their home for 30 years? No. The average American lives in his home anywhere between, 7 and 10 years, depending on, the source. So most people don't live in their home. and again for that long, and again, yeah, if you're committed to that period of time, yes, you will own your, if, assuming that nothing changes in your life, there's no life events over that 30-year period, somebody doesn't die, somebody doesn't get sick, you don't get divorced, you don't get a job transfer, yada, 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 yeah, that may work out for you. But I would rather manage risk more actively than that, because those kind of things are going to come up in your life. You know, I mean, 50% of the people in the United States get divorced. And most of the time they get divorced during bad economic times instead of good economic times. So housing prices are going to be lower rather than higher. And when somebody gets divorced, everything gets sold, including the family house. Most people don't have the money to buy the other partner out, especially at today's prices. Here in San Diego, the average price home is $950. So a husband and wife get divorced, that one of the other partners is going to have the ability to pay the mortgage on a $950,000 house on their own. No, they're not. They're not. So the house gets sold. So hard economic times hit, you know, the financial troubles, you know, bring about a divorce. The house gets sold during down times, during up times. So I'm one of those people in all facets of my life. I like to manage the risk that is at hand. I don't worry about what may happen in the future. It's what's happening now and what are the trends. And if you can adjust to those trends that successfully over the years, that you're going to be happier and most and more financially successful than people that don't.
With the Fed continually raising rates and hints of even more rate hikes, what's this going to do to real estate? Maybe not today, but a few months or a year from now.
Let's say down the road.
Yeah.
Right. Interestingly, in my book, Timing the Real Estate Market, I identify five key indicators that you have to stay focused on to have a excellent sense of what direction housing prices are going to go. Interest rates are one of those. But interestingly, that's the least predictive of all of my indicators. The other four, by the way, everybody, are existing home sales, new home building permits, mortgage defaults, and foreclosures. And the fifth one is interest rates. Interest rates are the least predictive, because if you look at over history, and most people are totally wrong about this. They go, oh my God, if the Fed starts dropping interest rates, which they're not going to do, the housing prices are going to start taking off again. That's not true. That's not true. If you look at the downturns that happened in the past, like look at the downturn in the United States where housing prices peaked in 1990 and they hit bottom 6 years later in 1996, mortgage rates fell 2 percentage points during that downturn. During the bubble, when they peaked in 2006 and hit bottom in 2012, mortgage rates decreased by 3 percentage points. So the thing is, housing prices can rise during rising mortgage rates, and they can fall during falling mortgage rates. So that's not the most key indicator to follow.
What's the biggest indicator for you right now?
Foreclosures in process.
Yeah. Are they starting to go up?
Yeah. Yeah, they hit bottom about 2 years ago, and in aviation terms, they're in about a 15-degree climb. nothing crazy yet, right? But they're climbing. They're climbing, and that's very. And so you have to look at that and say, okay, if things are so good, why are foreclosures rising? And the only reason is people are getting in trouble. And for a reason why housing prices haven't gone down more than they have during this downturn, it's strictly supply and demand. The demand for homes, as measured by existing home sales, has gone down, let's say, 20%. And in tandem, the inventory of homes for sale has gone down 20%. So essentially, supply and demand are back in equilibrium, almost no different than they were during the peak. That's why, at least nationally, that housing prices in the United States are, you know, like 1% below peak prices in June 2022. It's different in California, though, guys. Mm-hmm. California and some of the western states. That's the United States. Some of the western states like California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho. Seattle's the weakest city in the United States, followed by San Francisco. Seattle just went afterburner to the upside, and now they're crashing. You know, they're probably 10% below peak prices, where the average price home in the United States is only, you know, is like 1% below. But there's some places that are even above peak prices. So, but it's all about supply. There's no supply. For whatever reason, people aren't putting their homes on the market, even as demand falls. But that will change. That will change. And I tell people, look, all you have to do is look at a chart. Let's go back 50 years in the United States. I'll show you a chart. Boom, bust, boom, bust, boom, bust. Four times that has occurred in the last 50 years when prices got too high. This time, this was the biggest bubble ever. Do you think it's going to really think it's going to be different this time? What are the odds of it being different this time? What, 10%? Would you make a bet on 10%? That you'd bet a dollar that you have a 10% chance of winning. If the 10% chance comes through, you win a dollar. 90%, you're going to lose a dollar. Only a fool will make that bet. So all you have to do is look at the past and say, housing is cyclical. Everybody knows that. Look at the pattern. Look at the rent pattern that you just referred to, Jim. Look how high housing prices are relative to rents. And what happens when that occurs historically? Housing prices revert back to rental prices and even fall below. That's what happens. That's a history lesson for everybody. That's what happens. And to think it's going to be different this time, is that possible? Of course it's possible. Anything's possible. Is that what's likely to happen? No, it's really unlikely to happen. So I'm really glad you brought up that point about, you know, the cost to buy versus the cost to rent, because the studies have been done on that. And I'll tell you guys, I haven't told anybody this before. That's one of my secret indicators. That I tell everybody about 90 to 95% what I know. Do I tell them everything if I come up with a, wow, look what I know, and most people haven't figured it out yet? No, I don't tell them about it. That's just one of my secret in my back pocket indicators that I use, because historically it's been so predictive of which way housing prices are going to go in the past. You can't bet against it, guys. You're full betting against it. So I don't.
Are people, the house builders, the developers, how are they doing and what are they doing?
They're doing just fine. Because, one, there's no existing inventory, and the new home builders, even though the price of their inventory, their homes for sale, has come down significantly more than existing homes, they're still discounting prices, they're selling prices, and they're selling homes. In fact, over the course of time, a new home will cost on average 15% more than an existing used home. And that makes sense. It's a brand new home. Now, they're the same price. They're exactly the same price. So in other words, the home builders are still continuing to sell their product because the price has come down and they're the same price as existing homes. If their price was like typically 15% more than the existing homes, that wouldn't be the case. But that's really interesting. I don't recall that ever happening, guys. And I've been following these markets since I was 1 year old, and my dad had me, I don't know what he had me. He didn't have me doing much on his job sites, but I was there.
We'll have more with Robert Campbell right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
We're speaking with Robert Campbell. Bob, Fed rate hikes, are they scary or are they needed to correct market forces?
They're needed. I mean, from a standpoint, it depends whose ox you want to gore. Mm-hmm. If you're a rich guy that owns stocks, that owns real estate, You want the Fed to stop raising rates and start lowering rates. Okay, if you're, and when I say rich guy, I would put rich guys in the, like, let's say you're in the top 10% of the wealthiest people in the United States. Forget about the 1% or the 10th of 1%, all those guys. Those guys are just crooks, you know, feeding off corruption and inside information. You want rates to go down. But from the standpoint of everybody else, you want rates to go up. If for no other reason to cause a recession that will bring housing prices down, because that's your only hope of ever buying. Unaffordability is at record highs right now, or near record highs. It's so close. Let's just, you know, for the sake of simplicity, it hasn't come down at all. In fact, almost, you look at peak prices back in 2022, June 2022 versus what they are today. You know, back in 2022, mortgage rates were like, you know, 3.5%, 4%. Now they're double that. Now they're 7%. So you factor in 7% into a house that hasn't gone up in price, hasn't gone down in price. So unaffordability is just as bad today as it was then. And that's what ultimately kills markets. You can't afford a house. That's another key indicator. You can't afford that. Unaffordability. And just go back and look at a chart. Go back and look at a 50-year chart of housing affordability. When it gets high, when it reaches certain levels, it's a danger zone. What happens when it reaches those levels? Housing prices go down. The next up cycle, it gets in the danger zone. What happens to housing prices? It goes down. Are the danger zones, is the current danger zone close to where it was during the previous danger zone? Yeah. There was kind of, you know, red line and blow up in about the same general range. And so that's what the charts tell you. The best way to predict the future, guys, is to study the past. And it's not that hard. That's one of the biggest revelations that I've learned in the last 22 years since I wrote my book. Look at past chart patterns and just observe them and say, okay, wow. Look, housing affordability was super low back here during this period of time. What happened after that? Housing prices went up. Then all of a sudden, housing prices kept going up, like they do during an up cycle. And then housing affordability got really low. What happened after that? Housing prices go down. You know, it's a repeating pattern, guys. Patterns repeat because people do the same thing over and over and over again. And, you know, that's one of the, it's the cyclical patterns that, you know, even though I referenced them in my first book, I didn't address them as, you know, focus on them like I'm going to do in the second book I write. Just look at the chart. Look what happens when things get here. What happens? Bad things happen. Housing prices go down. And what happens when they get here? They go down. And when they get here, they go up. So, I mean, you can't use that as the perfect timing indicator, but when you use them in conjunction with the five indicators that I've, presented in my first timing book, that's as good as it's going to get, guys. And so why am I so focused on this? Real estate's my favorite asset class. I've made more money in real estate than anything. And right now, personally, what I'm waiting for, I'm as patient as can be. There's no urgency to jump into this market at all. Zero. So I'm going to buy a high-end fixer in the area that I live in. And we're going to buy it at the bottom of the cycle. We're going to rent out our existing home, which is very nice. We're going to rent it out. We're going to make it our personal home. We're going to move into it. I'm going to fix it up, doing my Robert Campbell magic that I'm excellent at, because I've been around the home building business my entire life. And my dad built multi-million-dollar homes in Rancho Santa Fe for 55 years. So, you know, I'm a student of that. I know what's nice. And we're going to ride the cycle up, then sell it for probably, you know, I don't know what the next cycle is going to be, $1.5 million profit. You know, take our husband and wife to $500,000 deduction, pay the tax or something on $500,000 to $1 million, and tell the renters in our own home, give them 3 months' notice that we're going to move back into our old house. So we'll be sitting back in our own house with even though the money's not the biggest thing anymore, you know, with probably $1.5 million extra dollars in the bank. But it's more than the money, guys. It's the fact that you're playing the game successfully. And I want to show people how to do it. And I'm going to show my followers what I'm doing. Here's what and if I can do it, you can do it. I mean, maybe not everybody doesn't have the building and design skills I do. Maybe they have to hire it, but I'm showing the process. If you have to hire them, hire it. I don't need to hire anybody. But I do. When I run into a jam, I hire designers to come in and help me out if I can't figure it out on my own. But there's nothing like doing it yourself to show people how that it can be done. And plus, it's playing the game successfully. I mean, I don't mean to. What Warren Buffett, does he need more money? No, of course not. Why does he still play the game? Because he wants to show you that he still can, and they can be successful at it. I'm sure that's very, very empowering to him. But what else is he going to do? So he keeps playing the game, and he's been very successful at it his whole life. And this is something that I'm going to start sharing with my followers. Here's how you do it. The best way to make money in real estate, hands down, is to buy real estate when it's cheap at the bottom of the cycle, buy a home that needs repairs, add value to it the best way you can, ride the appreciation cycle on the way up, and sell during the peak. Is that always easy to do? No. Is it done? Yeah, it's done all the time. And that's how you make the most money in real estate. Most people out there in real estate, they're like, I liken them like the flippers. They're like sharks. A shark always has to be moving in order to live, right? So are these flippers. They're always flipping. They're always looking for the next deal. You know, oh, we got this deal. Oh, we got this. Now we sold this, and how'd you do on that? Ah, we did okay. You know, this one, oh, yeah, we did real. We lost money on this one. But nevertheless, they're always in the game doing that. It's almost like being a day trader. There are sharks that have to keep moving or they're going to die. There's a much better way for the average guy to make money in real estate. Flipping's a business. That's not an investment. The key is buying low. That's the key, guys. And I know you guys up in Canada there, you're in your own downturn right now that you haven't seen in 15 years. But it appears that this may be the real deal for you guys, too. Just be patient. Be patient. Find a way to time the market, you know, so you know when it's at bottom. Buy a home. If you already have a home that you live in, buy a rental. Buy two rentals. If all of a sudden, if you own your home free and clear, that, you know, move out, buy a house that you can move into. See, we have tax laws here in the United States. As long as you live in the house for 2 out of 5 years of ownership, and it's your own personal residence, when you sell, that a husband and wife get a $500,000 tax exclusion. That's a big deal, guys. That's tax free. And especially here in California, where, you know, there are no capital gains taxes. We have the highest state taxes in the country, you know, 13.5%. So you add that on to 20% national, national capital gains, you're talking about that when you make a profit, even if it's a long-term profit, if you live in California, your gain is taxed at 35%. You got to get away from the taxes, guys. You got to find a way, the best way to beat the tax man. Otherwise, you're just on a treadmill, and you're running your ass off and not getting anywhere. So that's why you got to try to use that. You got to be very strategic what you do to get by today.
Are there any quick fixes or tricks to turn a property around and make a big profit on it? Friends of mine in Winnipeg used to take old mansions and fix them up, and they said gold trim and a flagpole really does the trick.
Well, I've been around the building business my entire life, and I know there's always that, here's all you have to do. You know what? No, there are no easy fixes. I'll tell you I'll tell you a secret to making a lot of money in real estate that most people don't realize is spend a lot of money on landscaping, especially on front of the house. And I always do. There's where I hire a landscape architect, and a good one, because that's a skill that I don't have. I mean, can I design things in a home? Yeah, I'm really good at it. I mean, when it comes to designing landscaping, where to put the tree, you know, how the walkway should curve into the house, you know, where the wall should be. No, No, I'm not very good at that. So I hire a really good landscape architect. And so what'll I pay him? Whatever he wants. I mean, let's just say today you got to pay him $2,000 just to do the design work. I don't want him to, I don't want him to install the landscaping. I just want you to give me a plan and we'll talk about it. Yep, I love the plan. Thank you very much, sir. Here's your $2,000 and then I'll execute the plan. But that landscaping will make you more money than anything, guys. And let me tell you why. You can get the most beautiful home in the world with crap landscaping in front of it, and it looks like a crappy product. You can take an average home and just pimp out the landscaping with beautiful design and mature trees, and you'll sell that home so fast and for more money than you'll ever believe. But most people, that's where they cut back. They cut back on landscaping, and it's you're being penny wise and pound foolish. Spend the money on landscaping in the front of the house, not the back of the friggin' house. When somebody drives by and looks at your house, that it's first impression. Somebody's gonna look at that and go, "Hey, that's a beautiful home. I like that home." But if you got crap landscaping in front of it, they're gonna go, and that's that first impression. So you got to make that first impression. It's from 50 years experience, guys. I don't know about the black flagpoles.
Well, not black, but they took mansions and basically they looked like mini embassies.
and some of those old mansions, I've never done an old mansion, but you know what? I mean, for example, in San Francisco, they have some of those Victorians.
Yeah.
To refurbish those Victorians, Jim, that's a lot of money, dude. I mean, there's like about seven different colors, and there's all these different trims and doodads and that kind of thing. I've never done a house like that before. Everything's done off scaffolding. I'm a Southern California boy. Everything's like Spanish single story, you know, sometimes two story, but, you know, only about 50% of the time. So that's what I know. The best real estate deal, the most money I've ever made in real estate was this. Back in 1990, during the start of the downturn in San Diego, I bought a 5,000 square foot home on a 1 acre site in a public golf course. The first hole of the golf course sat right there. 500,000 cash. I took a year off. I put $100,000 of money into that house. I did some of the work myself, but certainly maybe 20%. Because when you have a house that big, I mean, there's like 70 passage doors. It would have taken me 2 months to paint the inside of that house. So you hire most of it out. But where I really spent the money and put the time in was in the landscaping. We got equipment out there, and we completely removed everything that was around the house. Everything. It was a dirt, you know, it was a nice house with trees. We took everything out. I hired a landscape architect. We came in, and we changed everything, the walkways, the trees, everything, the way the whole house was set up, how the lawn wrapped all the way around the house and everything. I sold that house. I bought it for $500. I put $100 into it. I sold it 2 years later so we could get our tax advantages on it. I sold it for $1.2 million. There wasn't a comp on, that was in a bad market. There wasn't a comp on that street, all 1 acre homes. It was a very nice area. You know, that was back in the day when $1 million home was really a nice home. It was something special. I mean, unlike today. But I sold it for $1.2 million and all my real estate buddies went, "Wow, look what Bob's pricing his home at, 1.2. There's no comps. He was 20% over the market at a minimum. He's never going to go get that." Even though they knew it was a nice place and they loved the house, everything I had done to it, everybody just said, "No, he's asking too much." I sold it, and it was at least 50% of it was the landscaping. And if, you know, one of these days on my website, I'm going to do a blog post of it before and after, and it's going to blow your mind what I did with the. I didn't change any square footage in the house. I didn't move a wall. Nothing. But the landscaping, I spent so much time on that landscaping, and then after we lived in, every Saturday, For as long as we lived there, I spent all day taking care of the landscaping. I didn't mow the lawns and trim the lawns and all that because that was too much work. We had all these walkways and, you know, I had to have a professional service. Shit, that would have taken, I wouldn't have been able to do the job they did. But the rest of the time, I made sure that landscaping was perfect. Trimmed out all the trees, thinned out all the plants. And that's what sold the house, guys. Sold the house. I made a $600,000 profit. I've never made that. I made 100% profit on that house in less than 3 years in a bad market. And I'm telling you, I attribute most of it to the landscaping. The person that came up to that house went, wow, this is the kind of house I want to live in. Mature trees, mature lawn. The lawn was perfectly green, perfectly manicured. All the plants looked like it came out of, the Getty Museum. But it was worth it. It was worth it. And that's what I'm going to do again.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
You're welcome, Jim. We'll catch you again next month, okay?
My guest has been Robert Campbell, publisher of the RealEstateTiming.com newsletter. He was speaking to us from San Diego. If you have any questions for Bob or any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet, or as some people are now calling it, X. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.